Welcome to our BYU TV special, 1984, 40 years strong and true. A two-hour roundtable event held in the spring of 2024 at the beautiful BYU Music Building in Provo, Utah. We invited all members of BYU's historic 1984 National Championship team back to campus to reminisce on an unforgettable and unprecedented season. We selected key coaches and players from that team to sit on a panel and share some never-before-heard stories, some heartwarming, some downright hilarious, from that remarkable run to a title. So, join us in celebrating the national championship team as well as 100 seasons of BYU football. BYU TV presents 1984, 40 years strong and true, the Roundtable. Well, officially, I'd like to welcome you again to the 1984 BYU Football National Championship Roundtable Special. And to do so, let's start by bringing out the first of our elite panelists and begin with one of the outstanding offensive linemen on the 1984 Cougar squad, Lewis Wong. Now, here comes Lewis, and we should note, he was one of the first Hawaiian-born players that left the islands and chose BYU in 1981. He started a pipeline and was a big part of a pipeline that BYU certainly benefited from. Lewis, welcome to the stage. Our next panelist is Jim Herman, defensive lineman. He finished his career with 26 sacks and 6 forced fumbles, a 7th-round selection of the Dallas Cowboys. Jim, welcome to the stage and welcome to the show.
Good to see you. Thank you.
Currently, this young man works as a do-it-all analyst and college football insider for the ESPN networks. He is a proud member of the BYU Sports Nation family on Mattich Mondays. He was also an All-American center at BYU. And he'll tell you, he never lost to his rivals, not once. Trevor Mattich is with us tonight. Trevor came a long way, all the way from Nash, Vegas, to join us in Provo tonight. Trevor, welcome.
Spencer.
Next on the panel, linebacker and Helix High School great, a man who was drafted by the Cincinnati Bengals in the 5th round and the defensive MVP of the 1984 Holiday Bowl, Leon White is with us tonight. Leon looks like he can still play.
One play.
Welcome, Leon. Our next panelist, outstanding wide receiver for BYU and a man who, frankly, never got the ball enough. If Robbie had passed him the ball more, he says BYU would have won games by more points. He is Glenn Kozlowski. The Chicago Bears and Jim McMahon were lucky to ever have this guy.
Yeah, it would have been 100, by the way, just for the record. You went a little light on it.
Now, one of our esteemed panelists who was just played a huge role as a coach on this BYU team and is extending his trip to Provo specifically for this show for a little bit longer tonight, Norm Chow, NFL and college football veteran, mastermind of the BYU offense, is with us tonight. Coach, great to have you here.
Thank you.
Up next, the man who caught the game-winning pass in BYU's win over Michigan that clinched a perfect season and eventually the national championship. We're all glad Robbie saw him streaking down the left side of the sideline. Kelly Smith is with us tonight. Welcome, Thanks, Kelly.
Thank you.
Up next on the panel, a man who brought fearsome toughness to the BYU backfield. An NFL veteran once again. So many NFL draft picks on this team. And a guy who got BYU's offense rolling in that first game against Pittsburgh into the end zone. He is Lake Heimuli. Welcome, Lake. Panelist number 9, a man who is, and I could spend a long time talking about him, but a special teams star, do-it-all guy for BYU football, and a man who could bring electricity to the stadium in one play. So many times, he was the guy to get the BYU offense going next level. Elder Vi Sikahema.
Thank you, Spencer.
Great to have you. I believe this next man is a guy who deserves more credit for what he did at BYU. Incredible hands, incredible route runner and pass catcher, and a man who put up record-setting numbers in the 1984 season. He is David Mills. And unlike Glenn, David's pretty soft-spoken. He was not the guy that was clamoring for the ball.
He got it more, though.
It's because I didn't talk so much.
And we're off. Our next panelist, another coach that we're so thrilled to have with us tonight, another instrumental piece of the 1984 National Championship team, a man who so many players looked to for guidance when things got pressure-packed. He is Mel Olson. Coach, welcome. Feel free, as a former coach of these guys, to be as brutal as you want on this panel. And last but not least, the quarterback who led BYU to the 13-0 season and who worked through some really tough moments, especially in that first game against Pittsburgh, as he took on the very easy task of following in the footsteps of Nielsen, Wilson, and McMahon. He is, and Steve Young, I should add, Robbie Bosco. He's bringing in some hardware as well.
Has that been at your house the whole time?
I knew the trophy was somewhere. Who would have guessed it would be at Bosco's house?
Cause hasn't stopped yet, has he?
Once again, with all the panelists in place, let's put our hands together for a rambunctious applause, if you will, for this amazing team. Now, to set the stage, we need to rewind a little bit to the 1983 season, and if all of your all of you could hear Steve Young talk about this. I'm sure you've had conversations with him about it. You never bring up the Baylor game to Steve in 1983. He'll talk about that as the one thing. But it was even though that Baylor loss happened, it launched BYU into this 25-game winning streak that all of you were such a prominent part of, going 13-0 in 1984. And BYU finished that season number 7. Of course, Steve finished 2nd in the Heisman voting, and he was off. And then, as I said a moment ago, it was the simple task of Robbie Bosco to come in and take over for Steve Young. So, Robbie, taking over for a team that finished number 7 in the country, that only lost that one game and beat Missouri dramatically in the Holiday Bowl, what was that like for you to be the BYU quarterback with the great Lavelle Edwards leading the charge as well?
I tell you, it even went back further. So when I first came into BYU, Jim McMahon was the quarterback. And he had set like 80-some-odd records the first year and then was spectacular. And then Steve did what he did. And, you know, it was hard. But I still felt like I had to prove myself. You know, like I haven't been in spring practice or things like that. And I felt comfortable with the offense, though. And so I was just like, just go out there and do the best you can, and let's see what happens.
Well, and thankfully it started super easy on live national television at the first game that was ever broadcast live by this little network called ESPN. When you go to Pittsburgh and take on the number 3 Panthers, and we'll invite all of you to chime in as you please, but as we take a look at some of these highlights, a lot of people...
they see the final score, and they remember the game-winning touchdown pass at the end, for sure, and what that meant for BYU. But there was some real adversity that BYU had to overcome in this game, including an 11-point deficit, 14-3. So,
Spencer, by the way, we just saw Glenn Kozlowski make a diving catch. He did not have to dive. He never had to dive. The ball was always thrown right there.
Did you hear them clap? So
but he would stretch out and make and these diving catches.
I literally would slow up on purpose just to dive. Well, but if you want to show Robbie's first pass. I was running this little choice route at 10 yards. Bellini had a little hitch outside. He sat down, and Robbie threw it to this, I think, was it your grandmother in the stand?
It was up there.
Because it went, and it just fluttered out, and literally this 80-year-old woman just snatched it. I mean, great hands, boom. Put it, tucked it, and then that's how we started.
Well, then
what
it
were
was,
you thinking, Norm?
That's what I want to know what Norm was thinking after my first three plays. Because after that play, I hit Adam Haysbert in the back of the head on a little out. Then we had another play. I think I threw it at Kelly Smith's feet. And then I was like a mess. I'm like, oh, my goodness. I don't know if I can play.
Yeah,
not going very good.
After that first play I got at halftime, Adam Haysbert and I was called over into the corner of the locker room, and Mike Holmgren chewed us out. Like, Adam and I both looked at ourselves and said, we're never going to get a play again. You guys both messed up your first play. You're not ever going to get there in again.
Robbie just threw a pick six. Yeah, did anyone see that?
Let's keep talking.
I just turned to Lewis, and I'm like, I knew the game was tight. Oh, yeah, we gave him 7 points. Yeah. Sorry. I forgot, Robbie.
I'm still waiting to hear Norm.
But it was a good pass.
Oh, wait, another
how
one.
How about, first of all, can we rewind that one back? Because
well, I had a shot in my elbow, and I couldn't feel anything.
That's because you dove when you didn't have to dive all the time.
Okay, you're right. You know, it was at the days, right, Norman, when they just shoot it up, and you go play again, and my arm was flopping around. So, yeah, it bounced off my chest, for crying out loud. I couldn't get my arm right.
All right, Coach, after two turnovers and two Pittsburgh touchdowns, that's 14-3. What's going on in your mind at this point?
We need the next quarterback lined up ready to go.
Norm, come on, you're my guy.
Oh, by the way, he did throw a nice pass on the first play of the game, too, now that I remember that other quarterback.
That was Blaine. Throwing the halfback pass. Blaine threw the halfback pass.
That was Blaine Fowler, for sure.
Yeah, he did Lock A for me.
Then Lock A moonwalks his way into the end zone.
That's
okay,
right.
Not a moonwalk, but physical play right there. You go for two. Robbie, you're looking for who else? Later on, Glenn Kozlowski in the back
that.
Of the end zone.
That referee catch. Didn't like me because I dated his daughter. So he was picking on me. I'm telling you, I went to high school with his daughter, so that's why he called me out.
And that's where the momentum seemed to shift a little bit. Let's go talk to a couple of the defensive guys here, Jim and Leon. Like, Marv Allen makes the play. The great Marv Allen comes up the interception. What did you feel when he made that play? Jim, we'll start with you.
Not just that play. Honestly, Marv made a couple unbelievable plays. We had a goal line stance on the other end zone. I remember specifically third and two or whatever it was. And Marv is just all over the field. I looked up the stats from the game. I mean, he was our leading tackler by far, and just really sideline to sideline and pretty much shut those guys down. And you know, people forget it. I think Chris Dolman's in the Hall of Fame. Bill Frelick was the Outland Trophy winner. Chris Congemi was their quarterback. They had Ironhead Hayward. Those guys were loaded and had, you know, quite the talent. So I think going in for us, it's hard to remember everything, but certainly I think there was a buzz. We had top seven the year before. We lost some significant players. Didn't get a lot of. We didn't start in the top 25. I think.
No, unranked to begin.
Yeah,
we're
so,
like fifth in the WAC.
Yeah,
we picked to finish fifth or sixth or.
But we had a little buzz during training camp of like, hey, look, things have set up really good for us. We're unknown. We're out of the top 25, but game one gives us an opportunity to launch substantially up the polls, or at least make a name for ourselves if we can do this. And that kind of was percolating through camp, but. You know, right before we went out, I can't remember if it was pregame or if it was the night before, but Craig Garrick, you know, we had all kind of been mulling it over, but Craig gave an impassioned speech of, like, look, you know, let's do this, man. We start, this is the first step to what could be an unbelievable season. So it was an amazing time.
Yeah, great point. And again, like, you knew if you got through Pittsburgh, and Leon, I'm gonna ask you to follow up on that, like, when you realized what could happen after you did win this game, like, When did you start to buy into what Jim's just talking about, or that this could be an unforgettable, special, undefeated season?
Well, the way our offense started, I didn't think we were ever going to get there.
Well, I think we only spotted on 21, for crying out loud. Well, what's your problem?
In fairness to the offense, if the leading tackler by far was a defensive back against a running team, what were the rest of you guys doing?
Well, Leon was making plays, and I think Herman was just having
Marv was a middle linebacker. Somewhere. So, I mean, it's the front seven taking care of business.
I knew we had a special team, though. Our defense, we carried over a lot of players from the last year, and we were ready to, because we didn't know how Robbie was going to turn out.
Sure.
I mean, Robbie was green as ever, but he came in, and after the first few plays, he loosened up, and he became the Robbie that we all know. And defense backed him up the whole year, and that's why we were champions.
Yeah, one of my favorite quotes from you, Leon, is, like, our defense was able to overcome games where we turned the ball over six times.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
That's how good BYU's defense was.
We just tried to make it close. That's all. Our plan was, our defense is so good, let's highlight them.
Now, Robbie, I want to go back to you, and we just saw the pass to Adam Haysbert. Walk us through that play and what you remember about that read specifically and what opened up on the field.
Well, all through practices and all that, I was always taught by Norm and Coach Holmgren and everybody that it was Norm called a 69H option. So what it did was put Kelly to spot up if they were in zone or make a move man on man. And because we were just trying to get a first down. So yeah. It was third and four. So one of my key reads is watching the free safety. And that free safety came down to double up on Kelly. So without even thinking anything else, I just had confidence in Adam Haysbert. He's the run of post. He made a great move, was open. We completed it, and it was a great play by Adam, too.
Yeah, touchdown BYU to win against Pittsburgh.
Do you want to correct him on the play call, or should I? Oh, by the way, Rob, that was a 63, not a 69, just so you know.
It was 69.
It was half 69. Back,
69, halfback option. Yeah,
Kelly confirming.
I think I can remember the plays calls.
You play up there? I don't know. It was 63, and I was wide open, and yet you threw it over the top of me again.
Glenn couldn't remember the plays then, and he can't remember them now.
No, I do want to say that it didn't matter 1 to 110. We all loved each other. Everybody competed hard. It didn't matter. You know what? I had a couple of DBs. I'd run horrible routes on Thursday, and Norm would scream at me, and they'd jump and pick it off. And I'd yell at them. They'd go, well, run your route better. They're right. And that's what made us good. It made us great. You know, my brother Richard couldn't play anymore, but, man, he filmed practice every day for the O-line and Coach Olson and, you know, getting that to him. And then Norm would just yell at us all the time, and that's the way we'd play hard. So it worked out well. Sorry, I just wanted to make sure that we acknowledge all the studs that are
love
out here.
That. I love that.
Yeah. Let me add to that. I second what Glenn said. You know, you're around a lot of football, and the culture means so much. The plays are plays, schemes are schemes. And these guys here, you can tell 40 years later, are still dear friends. That's what set that team apart. And I think the development of these young guys, the situation that Lavelle created by the year in, year out, like you say, Robbie was ready to step in. After Robbie came the next guy. And that was a real credit to all of these men and Lavelle Edwards. I really do. I really think that he did not. Lavelle was not concerned about scheme. Lavelle was concerned about the culture of a football team, taking care of these men, and I think that made a big difference.
Oh, well said. We push forward to game number two. Baylor, some vengeance for that one loss that BYU suffered in 1983. This time, the Bears had to play in Provo, and they felt the wrath, a blowout. And it's one thing to go on the road and have some success against the likes of Pittsburgh, but then there's this kind of cliche where it's like, oh, you have a natural letdown. There was no letdown. And so, Coach Olson, I'm going to ask you, how do you get guys right mentally to prepare them for avoiding the emotional letdown after a big win like they had against Pittsburgh?
They don't let the offensive linemen have a lot of emotion. We just do our job, just hold them, give pass protection so that the people can do their job. And so basically the units come together as far as the offensive line, the defensive line, and we have a job to do, and the people that call a play just said, hold them out, you know? So they'd get their 4 seconds to do, and Trevor anchored it and kept us on the straight and narrow.
Now, I'm seeing a lot of Glenn Kozlowski and Kelly Smith highlights in this game. Kelly, what do you remember about this Baylor contest and the home opener for BYU in 84?
Well, it was just fun to have the home crowd involved. You know, it's packed, the people are going crazy, and, you know, and it was fun to get the first game out of the way because, like I said, I felt like some of us maybe run a few wrong routes, but it was just fun. We started off strong, you know, we scored early. I grew up, I didn't get a lot of hugging in my family growing up, but I got hugged every time when Lewis would come up and hug everybody that scored a touchdown. So I always thought Lewis was the hugger on the team, just so you know. No, that was awesome.
So was Lewis, Scotty Robinson. He was a hugger, too. He was always in the end zone still hugging people.
Lewis, are you still the hugger to this day?
I would say so. No, you can't help but love these guys. Awesome. I mean, our job, Trevor's and I, our job was really easy compared to all the technical things that these receivers and you guys had to go through. We didn't have to think. We just had to block the guy in front of us.
Yeah, well, let me just suggest this, that Lewis was playing right tackle, and he was on an island. We were all on an island. Our schemes on that offensive line, I haven't seen anybody do it since with the regularity that we did it. The 5 offensive linemen accounted for as many as 7 defenders every single, well, not every play, but a lot of the plays. That meant that the backs could get out in free releases, and we put 5 people out into the pass pattern. So the guards, if they had, you know, linebackers over them, they would take a step back. If this linebacker didn't come, he'd go out to get the outside linebacker. If he came, this guard did it too. You know what that meant? That meant that Lewis Wong was all by himself over there at right tackle without an inside presence with his guard there a lot of the time. And guess what? They couldn't beat him. Dave Wright at left tackle, same way. Couldn't beat him. And those guards were always in space having to block people. And that gave the little guys opportunities to do things that other teams didn't. And even today, people would say that, coaches would say that that's unsound because you can't just leave people on an island like that. They slide protect. We didn't know what slide protection was. But it wasn't unsound. It's that we had coaches that taught us how to do it.
Now, David, we've seen a couple of touchdown catches from you in this Baylor game as well. What was the atmosphere and the environment like at the time? It's now Lavelle Edwards Stadium, but at Cougar Stadium when you came home and had some momentum?
Well, I think if you go into it, I mean, you say coming home, you know, as a fifth-year player in the program, you're doing things like that, and all of a sudden we're rolling. There was a lot of energy to try and really show who we were because Baylor beat us last year. And if I remember correctly, our first 7 or 5 offensive periods going out, we scored all the way through. And things were just clicking. You know, you talk about in the game, and I really kind of look at it this way. I think, Kaz, you had 2 touchdowns in that game. Kelly had 2. I had 2. We kind of set it up to where if you want to take away somebody, there's somebody else. It was his job just to get us the ball, and these guys protected, and it turned out to be a great model for us all year. And then, of course, we had guys like Leon and all that, the rest of it, if we ever screwed up, they took care of business for us. So.
And we did a lot, but they would always be there and ready to roll.
Every day, Norm Chow would make me start in practice, and the first thing we had to do was tight end linebacker blocks.
Oh, gosh.
And I kept looking at Norm like, if I wanted to be a fullback, I would have gone someplace else. Okay? And to this day, Leon, I still have a scar right here across my head from how many times my helmet got cracked by you, okay?
I have to tell you, though, that was the funnest time I ever had in a practice. The drills that we have with our running backs and tight ends, the one-on-ones, and the pass coverage and the pass rush.
Oh, gosh.
We had such a blast. There was so much trash talking in those sessions.
Now, Lockie, you were going to add something to this.
No, I was going to say Robbie Parker in that game had a heck of a game. Yep. And then I think that that goes to show how underrated. They didn't get all the credit that they need, our offensive line. If you look at the highlight, there's 2 or 3 offensive line way ahead of the running backs. And that's credit to the offensive line.
I think the last piece, too, to talk about is, and I know you had a question, but this will make sense with Baylor. Again, Craig wrote a poem for us before the game. And, you know, he read it, and I forget, it was, you know, it was, who knows, it was like a second grader that wrote it, but we all got it. And we were all, like, ready to cry and tear up, and then Big Louie, we got together, you guys remember this, put our arms around each other, and Big Lou said a prayer. And from that, it was from there, on Friday night to Saturday, we just blew it up. I mean, it was ugly, and from that point on, it was, we were going to make it close sometimes just because we felt like it. But we always knew we were going to win. I mean, it never – did anybody here think we were ever going
to
lose?
No, I think to echo that point, what Coach Chow said earlier, I believe winning and losing can be a learned behavior. And I think we were fortunate enough as freshmen to learn to win. At least that's how I felt. I think our offense – I mean, we grew up in the Miracle Bowl. I did anyhow. And, you know, we were dead in the water, and we won that game. And Jim McMahon and Coach Chow and Coach Edwards and everyone created a culture of winning, and that really no matter what situation we're in, there was a chance to pull it out. So I just think that is going to permeate the season, whether it's Wyoming or whatever game where we got into something that was tighter. Where, I mean, Lee Johnson, all he had to do was kick the ball. Two block punts in the Hawaii game for touchdowns. He's my buddy. I love him. I have lunch with him twice a week. For crying out loud, tuck it and run. LJ, let's go. But
still be on.
But even then, like, it never, at least on the sidelines, I think Coach Chow and like I said, our offense had this, I thought, I mean, my gosh, Jim McMahon had 78 NCAA records, and we were breaking every passing record and offensive record known to mankind. And I just felt like I was on a team that kind of really, no matter where we were, somehow we were going to pull it out. And I think that was vital to what happened.
But see, Jim led us in that, along with some other great leaders and our captains and stuff. Because that Pitt game, we knew that was one of the most talented rosters in the nation. So, and we didn't know how good we were, really. But we knew they were good because we were told how good they were. And we saw them on film, right? So we go out there and we match up with them player for player. They weren't better than us. They weren't. Sorry. They weren't. They were a great team. But we belonged on that field with them plus. We knew, though, watching that Baylor tape, that they didn't have the roster that Pitt had. And what we had to do was stay focused. And Jim kind of set that going with the Pitt game, because I remember you being focused on Bill Frelick. They had an all-world offensive tackle who was like a candidate for, I don't know, the Heisman Trophy, right, and the Outland Trophy and all the rest of it. And I remember you had me scared of Bill Frelick. And he played offense.
Hopefully so.
Because you were focused on him like every day doing something about what you were going to do to beat Bill Frelick.
Yeah, I mean, we won as a team, we lost as a team, and we didn't lose much. I think my freshman year we lost one game, Coach. I think sophomore year we lost two. I redshirted. There's going to be a pattern here. During that redshirt year, they lost more than one. My junior year, we lost one. My senior year, we were undefeated. So I was fortunate enough to be in a college program. My 4 years of active playing, I think we were 44-3, which is just, it's unbelievable for anyone at any program to have that success. And we were all part of that. Like, we were in a culture of winning and success. And I just think it all just kind of permeated and it all worked together, where it was defense stepping up when they need to or offense stepping up when they need to. But that, to me, is a direct reflection of Coach Edwards, Coach Chow, Coach Whittingham when he was there my freshman year, and Coach Ramage, my position coach, all the way through. Like Coach said, winning and is cultural. And we were blessed enough to be in an unbelievable culture and have that be my football experience. At least I feel blessed to have experienced that.
The power of a winning culture is very real. On to game number three we go, and Vi, I'm going to take the conversation to you because you start this highlight off with something we mentioned a few moments ago, just one of those electrifying special teams plays, 89 yards on a punt return touchdown, and it felt like really the game was over after this, Vi. So how did you set the tone, and what do you remember about this specific play in game?
I remember that I was dead tired about the 30-yard line. This was Tulsa?
Yes, this was Tulsa.
This was Tulsa. I don't even know what conference they came from, but by that point, we were such a machine that almost anything that special teams, I think we had the best kicker in the country, speaking of which, boom, there he goes. And, you know, our offense was unbelievable. Kurt Govea, we were just talking backstage how we wish that Kurt was here. Kurt Govea is one of those so underrated players. And he played, what, 15 seasons in the NFL, Norm?
18.
He played 15 years in the NFL and played on two Super Bowl teams with the Redskins. Just a phenomenal player, so smart. Robert Parker that Laquay mentioned, he was just a phenomenal. He brought the kind of speed that we hadn't seen at that position, right? I mean, Kelly was fast, but Robert had a different kind of fast. He had a different gear. It was just, you know, it was a unique time, and we love being with each other, and I don't know what that's about.
There we are.
Well, there's good reason we're showing Charlene Wells Hawks, because on the day you beat Baylor, as good as that game was for several of you, nobody remembered it because she was crowned Miss America.
That's right.
Was the BYU highlight of the day.
And Trevor dated her, so if I remember. Yeah. I mean, think about that. We had a national championship team and Miss America on our campus.
Amazing. Yeah.
Hello.
Amazing.
Does it get any better?
Wasn't Jim Nance our play-by-play guy then, too? And Jim Nance was our play-by-play guy.
Jim Nance was at KSL before he went to
He was calling
CBS.
Our plays.
Yeah, we had Norm Chow and Mike Holmgren calling the plays.
Think about that.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah. How could we
lose? Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Magical, to say the least. When Lewis came out, I mentioned that he was in the class, the high school class of 1981, coming from the islands. Correct. You were kind of a lone man on an island, no pun intended, choosing to come to BYU and leave, and that did not happen. It opened up new avenues for this Polynesian pipeline. So what went into your decision to choose BYU, ultimately paying off with the national championship, but what pushed you to choose BYU when you were in high school?
That guy right there, Coach Chow. Coach Chow came to the islands to recruit me. I wasn't LDS at the time. I believe he was recruiting two other kids from my high school that were LDS, and they left and chose to stay in Hawaii. And Coach took a chance on me because my coach was an LDS coach. And I'm not sure if my memory's a little old, but told Coach that you don't want that guy. He's not the type of guy that goes to BYU. And Coach, I think, talked to another high school coach, Boy Eldridge. Boy Eldridge, who coached at Punahou, was a scout. And he said, yeah, he can play. Just a matter of can you contain him. And I think he says, well, I think I got Kaz under control.
If anybody can control Ty Mattingly Kaz. Saved me my freshman year. He'd throw me into my bed at 3 in the morning. Yeah. Thank you, Ty.
If anybody can control Kaz, then you should be okay. So, Coach, thank you for taking a chance on me.
Laquay, and we're discussing the Polynesian pipeline because we're about to enter an unforgettable game at Hawaii where, I mean, if you want to talk about, like, fan vitriol and BYU going into Aloha Stadium, from the stories I've heard, I didn't experience it myself in 1984, but I've heard it was unlike any welcome that BYU got across the country. Laquay, what do you remember about going into Hawaii, you and Lewis, as guys that could have stayed on the islands, but you chose BYU?
it's just the way they react to you when you're on the sideline. You know, they yell at you. I thought they were my friends when I was in high school. Everybody was going, yeah, go Heimuli, you know? But then when I came to BYU, when we went back, everybody was hating me. And I was going,
that was just his family. and ward members.
But the good news is, Laquay never said a word, ever. I mean, that's what, to me, I always wanted to mimic that, and then, of course, my brain would misfire, and I'd start popping off again. But always, I mean, he'd just go out there, never say a word, and just bust people up. And, you know, he was that guy. He would just knock people down.
This was a knockdown, drag-out contest,
there is
Laquay there. Hard physical yards. You could use hard physical to explain the entire game. We're going to get to, eventually, the play that everybody talks about from this game when Kyle Morrell made the perfectly timed jump over the center to prevent a touchdown. I mean, it's one of the wildest, most incredibly athletic football plays I've ever seen, even to this day. So, I mean, what, Leon, let's go to you. You were on the defensive side with the great Kyle Morrell. What do you remember about that moment as it was definitely not too big for him to make that play?
Yeah. I was scared to death, believe me. And that was the first game I thought, oh, we may lose this one. How are we going to stop this play? We need a miracle.
And the miracle was Morrell.
Kyle Morrell, I mean, it was the most perfect timing play that I've ever been around in my whole career. And that was another thing that I think launched BYU football team to go on to do great things. What a play.
Hey, Spencer, I would add this. I don't think that play just launched BYU football. In my opinion, I think that's the greatest sports play in the history of BYU sports.
Yeah.
I think it's bigger.
I agree.
I think it's bigger than Danny Ainge's layup at the Atlanta against Notre Dame. I think it's bigger than any of the bowl games or even University of Miami, because without that play, we don't win a national championship.
Yeah. You're right.
I think it's the greatest, in my opinion, I think that's the greatest play in the history of BYU sports.
Can I just ask, who of the players here, who knew that play happened during the game? I didn't. All I know is we stopped them. I really didn't know until we got back, and my girlfriend's like, wow, Kyle made this amazing play. I'm like, he did? Because there was no Jumbotron. I don't remember being played during the game. I don't know. I'm asking seriously. Do you guys?
I had the best seat in the house. I was right there.
I mean, I was right there too. Like, I'm kind of looking right at it happening, but I don't. I just remember we stopped them. I didn't really appreciate the play until we got back and they were replaying it on KSL and showing what happened. But I don't know if you guys feel differently. But
well, no, Jimmy, you were doing your job.
No replay.
That's why.
Yeah, one other thing. I just want to say one other thing about culture. Because can we say that defense contributed to that win?
Oh, yeah.
And if you look at the panel, there's two defensive guys up here. We got a whole bunch of ballers out here that could be up here. We got a whole bunch of offensive guys, two defensive guys. I'm just saying, nothing's changed in 40 years. Like, KSL. KSL on Friday night, we'd all sit around and watch the coaches show and like, offensive highlight, offensive guys, two defensive guys. I'm just saying.
Hey, Jim, didn't you learn? It took you 40 years, you're a lawyer, to figure this out.
I figured it out.
They used to give out those helmets and all the offensive players, you get stacks of them. And the defensive players, you got one or two.
Yeah.
Jim McMahon took his Y off to put his little Cougars on. He had so many, right? He replaced his Y, took it off. But the defensive players, they had their helmets were clean. No,
we only had one category, win. We had one category. We had 13. Everyone else had, like, offense. I tied my shoes. I got my pants on the right legs. Sticker. I didn't jump off sides. Sticker. I threw a pick six in Pittsburgh and I tried to tackle him. Sticker.
Oh, that, Robbie, they're going after you
again. I know.
This is how the whole season was for me.
I heard a story here, and I need you to confirm this, but I'm told that, Robbie, you learned to count in Tongan so that you could communicate with Lake on the snap count, but at Hawaii, a bunch of the Hawaii players also knew that when you would communicate with Lake what the count was going to be on and using the Tongan language, they also were able to realize what was going to happen.
I finally had to tell Lake, you've got to get the snap count down. He could not get it down. And also, when we ran a trap, he hit me one time because I'm supposed to go this way, and he hit me so hard, he actually knocked me out almost. So I had to pat on my butt which way he was to go. Every play, I'm like, well, okay, you're over here this time. But he finally got it down.
That's true. That's
every
true.
Single time they did the stat count, we'd get up there, and LaKay would ask again every time, what was it on?
to me every single time.
So Robbie told him, and then he asked me again as we got up there, and I'm like, okay, it's on one, it's on two. Every single play, Robbie. After Robbie had just told him, he just told you, I know, but I forgot.
You know, on Norm's offense, it's so hard to remember things. I only remember where the tight end's going to go, what the play's going to be, and where I'm supposed to be going, and I forget the count. I said to myself, why bother yourself? You can just watch the guy hiking the ball, or you ask Robbie when he's walking in.
And then again, me.
That's a good one.
In spite of all of that, you found a way to beat Hawaii.
We did it. It was amazing. Probably the hardest hitting game that I've ever played in. I'm assuming, did you guys feel that way? Defensively?
Absolutely. This game? The Hawaii
just
game?
When we played Hawaii. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It was just the nasty. No one understands how hard it was to travel to Hawaii. Because back then, Norm, if I'm right here, they either stayed on the island or we had some of the best players in Hawaii come to BYU. But now, I think everybody goes into that state and we don't get as many as we used to get.
I played with Falaniko Nonga. Yeah. In the
great,
NFL,
great talent.
And yeah. He and I were teammates with the Cardinals, and it took him a few months to warm up to me, because the only thing he would say, I hate BYU, hate BYU, and those guys, there were like three of them that were all there, right? Pete,
Al,
they all played in the NFL, and man, those guys. They were more ferocious against us because they hated us. And partly because Norm would come and raid the island of the best players and leave them, you know, leave them with the scraps sometimes. So,
and everyone, you know, when we used to play Hawaii, especially when these guys were playing, I go, Vi, why aren't you blocking your guy? He goes, it's a chip. I'm just supposed to chip and release. I go, we don't have a chip and release. Block the guy.
He wanted me to man up against Noga and block him. I said, bro, I'm a scat back. My value to you is get me the ball. I'm going to chip him and release, and you get me the ball, and I'll make magic happen. I'm not going to make magic happen. All he was concerned about is that they blocked your guys.
Yeah, you blocked your guys.
Dude, hey, those guys are big. They were not hurt.
They were huge.
BYU finds a way, 18-13. You're now 4-0. We mentioned that the Cougars were ranked number 7 after the 83 season and fell out of the polls, unranked to begin. Well, now all of a sudden, you are number 7. David, at what point did you think, holy cow, we're a top 10 team, we're a top 7 team, this could actually become something super special?
I never really looked at like how it was. It, Glenn and I and Lewis were talking earlier, it was just a competition. And when they dropped us in rankings or did something else, honestly, all these guys sitting up here, all these guys sitting out there, we just competed. You wanted to tell us we couldn't do something? Watch this. You wanted to tell us we could? Okay, we can do it better. And it was just kind of that competitive part. Now, you know, going through the games and stuff like that, keep in mind, I've been in the program for 4 years. Jim and I came in the same class. That was my only year to play. I'd been watching a lot of great playing going on. And so you learn these things into it. And truthfully, you talk about the competitive side, you kind of wanted to prove that you belonged on the stage. And that was kind of my individual motivation. And I'm sure all these other guys up here had something very similar to where you wanted to show your value to the team. And that's kind of what, hey, if we do this, good things happen. And that's really what drove us. I mean, I personally didn't care what our ranking was as long as we had somebody to play.
Norm, you'd speak to this, but our practices were some of the best games that we ever played. Yeah. Our practices on, you know, Tuesdays and Wednesdays were unbelievably competitive. It was competitive, and you came, you showed up, you wanted to show the coaches that you've earned some time on the field. I never earned the time on the field because I had Kelly Smith playing in front of me, but it was just competitive. You had to come every day and show not only the coaches but your teammates that you could play. You had to earn people's respect, and it was sometimes the games were frankly easy, right? Because practices were so competitive.
Do you remember what Norm had going on at that time? As a receiver, it scared me to death. We had a drop list.
I don't remember that. I remember Norm's famous quote, "The routine catches we make and the impossible just takes a little longer. Time.
And that's why I'd slow down to make it look like it was impossible. See, Norm was right.
Yeah. So Spencer, and again, though, I think it go ahead, Norm.
No, excuse me. I think it goes back to, again, the culture that was developed. You know, there's a saying that players teach players more than coaches teach players. And this group is a perfect example of that. Like Vi said, the competitiveness, you know, you just wanted to do. You wanted to do the things right. You want because of these guys. And that I think, goes a very, very long way with what you're talking about with this team.
Well, and another thing with Lavelle, I mean, a lot of people didn't realize. I mean, Lavelle wasn't involved with the play-by-play every second. For example, I ran for about 30 yards once, and he goes, "Oh, man, you ran like my grandma. Can't you run a little faster?" And the next play when I scored, like 30 yards, he goes, "What was that play you just ran? I like that one. Tell him to run it again." And I'm like, it wasn't like Norm knew every second of every play you're going to run. But Lavelle, he was just into the game and keeping everything going the way it was supposed to be, and made it fun for the players when he'd come off, say funny things to you. But, I mean, he didn't know exactly what play was going to be run every second. And so when he said, "Hey, run that play again. I like that play." I mean, that was like, hey, that's pretty good. The coaches asked me, "What was that we ran?"
No, Vi's exactly right, though, about practices being harder than games most of the time. The thing is, you watch that play by Colin Morrell against Hawaii, and we all look at Colin Morrell inverted, and what a great play. You look at the other 10 guys, none of them got pushed back. They all reestablished the line of scrimmage on Hawaii's side of the line of scrimmage. Everybody won. Anybody could have made the play. It's just that Kyle was spectacular when he came over the top. But we had to face these guys in practice all the time. I played against Michigan, I was center. Their nose guard was one of two Wolverines to be first team All Big Ten for all 4 years that they played there. Two guys. That was one of them. Great player. Treated the game right. The hardest nose guard I ever had to face was Brad Smith, our own nose guard in practice. And the thing is, the coaches. Yeah, give Brad. That's Jim faced Bill Frelick, the monster tackle at Pitt. Jim beat him, right? And we had to face him every day in practice. And so this made everybody better. And so this is just one of the things I think that people need to realize about the success of this team. We had to face each other. And that was the hardest thing we had to do.
Hey, Larry Hamilton was a beast.
It didn't hurt. I mean, right?
We had such great depth,
it didn't
too.
Hurt. When my freshman year, it was near the end of team, and I was getting a few rotations in and out, and we were short goal line or something, and it got super heated, and all of a sudden Coach Whittingham, and I think it was Coach Chow, maybe not Coach if I got you wrong, but it was go time. Like, balls were flying, and people were throwing fists, and I'm like, can you do that? You know? But... And I mean this in the best way. We had great men coaching us, but we had very competitive people that cared about their position, their side of the ball, and did an amazing job creating, again, that environment and culture of hyper-competitivity.
Well, I'll say competition. This, right? Like, in practice, Ty Mattingly, who's sitting right there, I told him about a month ago, I hated going against him because he made me better than any opponent I have ever played. So the guys that are in the stands that should be here, We were great because of you guys. Wow. That competition was amazing. You know, and I look as an old lineman and just individuals, like, I hated Trevor because he was so freaking good.
I loved you.
And I always wanted to be better than Trevor. So we had five old linemen, and we thought we were the best. And every day we were out to prove that we were better than each other. So that competitive spirit made us what we are today.
You know, I think the best was Craig Garrick, our left guard.
Yeah.
He played with a knee that had no cartilage at all.
Yeah, he was something.
I mean, he was a phenomenal player. Without him, we wouldn't have won the national championship. Craig Garrick is a hero of that team. And so are, and you guys mentioned the guys in practice. When we won the Holiday Bowl, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves. When we won the Holiday Bowl, the final gun sounds, the confetti's out there, all the celebrations started. The first people I went to find were the practice squad guys, the scout team guys, because those guys were so hard to block because they knew what we struggled with. And there was one move that I just couldn't stop in practice. It's where normally, if a nose guard starts over here, I'd step over here. He spins back over here. I step over here. Plays over. He cries, and I'm happy with the way it went. But in practice, what they do is they start over here, spin over here, and then spin back halfway through. And I would end up in air over here with Coach Olson and Coach Friend saying, "What's the matter with you? Robbie's got to throw the ball. We need to practice." And that made me hyper aware of counter moves, and I never could stop that play. Fortunately, in the NFL, nobody tried that move against me. But that made us all better.
I do need to interrupt because we need to get a final thought here from Coach Chow. We got to excuse him early because he's got to go catch a flight, and he's been so gracious with his time.
Are we recruiting again, Coach?
Coach is going back to the islands to recruit the next great BYU offensive lineman.
Yeah.
Coach, just how would you sum up the 1984 season in its entirety and what it's like to be back with all of these men in this room?
Well, it was just an honor, a privilege, and it continues to be around men like this, not only good players. You know, the season was great, but to see these guys and fathers, husbands, grandfathers, it makes you feel good. That you know, football is football. Who won the game 10 years ago? But to see the growth in these young people, and a lot of these guys have coached as well, and they understand it as well, that to see the a young man come in like Lewis and David from Alta and wait his turn, and Robbie came in to wait his turn. I tell you a quick story about Rob. Rob was being recruited, and so was Sean Salisbury. Remember that name?
Oh, yeah.
Sean Salisbury. And Robbie was going to wait until Sean decided what he was going to do, but we knew that we wanted this guy. And Glenn had already committed. Glenn was a friend of Sean's as well. And we were almost hoping that because Sean was such a big light. But anyway, my point is simply that these young men are men now, they're fathers, and that's what you're most proud of. I really am. It was an honor and a privilege. These guys can tell you all the stories they want. But when we went out on that practice field and we ran 63, Rob, I think it was 63.
It was 63, but we could go with 69, whatever they want.
But I'll tell you another quick story, and I apologize for having to go. But because of this culture and this camaraderie that they had, we called a play once where everyone would run a curl and a flat. And this guy sees the coverage, understands that there's a safety, two safeties, and runs a post. Robbie throws it to him, touchdown. But they had that in them. And that continues to be so as you see them grow up to be men and fathers and grandfathers. It just makes my heart feel good. And again, it's a real honor, a real privilege to be back, to be amongst these men. And God bless. Thank you very much.
The great Norm Chow.
Love you, Coach. Love you,
Coach.
Coach.
Spencer, can I just jump in and say something while Norm is walking?
Yes,
the fact that we got coached by men like them, they taught us more than just football. They taught us to be men. And as Norm said, I think ultimately they knew that in spending the time that they did with us, what ultimately was going to happen was that they were going to teach us to be husbands and fathers and leaders in our communities. And Patty and Lavelle came to stay in our home one weekend when they were on a mission in New York. This was probably 2002, 2003, when they were serving as a couple missionary there. And they came and stayed in our home. We stayed up late every night talking. And Lavelle, in a moment of musing, said to me, "You know, I don't know if the purpose of our program was to build championships or to just build champions." And I've never forgotten that. I wish that would be on a bumper sticker somewhere at BYU. What they ultimately did was help prepare us for our roles that we would have. And I'm sitting here, I was talking to Dave, and he and I came in, we were in the same class, me, Dave, and Herman.
Jim. I'm a defensive guy.
What's your name again? You were on the team, right?
Exactly.
We came in together, and you know, talking to Dave and hearing from him, telling me that I asked him, "Are you going to move back here at all ever to retire here?" No, he says, "My life is in Chicago. My daughter lives right behind me, and my other kid lives just up the street. That's where my life is." And man, I can't tell you the surge of pride that I had just hearing. You know, his life and being around his children and grandchildren. And we are brothers,
like this is a 40-year anniversary, but you know we're brothers forever, you know. So it's just a this we have a lifetime of memories, but it's but the experiences that we had in those four short years that we were all here will stay with us forever.
I was asked to introduce Lavelle at an award ceremony at one point. And that's the thing that popped up in my mind was that they all wanted to talk about the championships. And my thought was that the his legacy and the legacy of the coaches that all coached us, led by Lavelle, but in this case, talking about Lavelle, the legacy was not the trophies in the case. The legacy was the man standing outside that trophy case with his son looking at the trophies he won playing for Lavelle and these other coaches. And that man is a different kind of husband and father than he ever would have been. And those wives and children have a different life than they ever would have had, had it not been for what we didn't even know was happening at the time. And that is being mentored by men such as this.
So many great thoughts being shared, incredible stories thus far, and we're approaching the midway point of this season recap. You ran through Colorado State, a blowout to say the least, 52-3. That is the number 7 team. The nation, again, taking notice as BYU vaulted to number 5 in the rankings before you come home for a strange game, not surprisingly, against another rival in Wyoming. This was a back-and-forth slugfest. Glenn, you catch a pass right there. You said, like, sometimes we made it interesting, but we always knew we were going to win. A lot of people were nervous about this game, especially as it got into the fourth quarter, Glenn.
Yeah, we were not concerned. I mean, we were concerned because our defense, you could always count on them. We're like, well, we're going to actually have to play hard today because our defense is kind of struggling a bit. But, no, it was, in fact, on that first catch, Louis came to hug me and he knocked me out. And so I played the rest of the game, don't remember it. And then Dave got his eye poked late in the game and we took our wife to homecoming and he had this big old black eye and I was staring off in space, you know, like, why are we here? And my wife standing behind us like, you guys are knuckleheads. So what are you doing?
But Dave.
It was, you know, it was fun. And then Dave made a, you know, a great little pass that.
What was that?
Well, we worked on that a lot.
I didn't say I could dance. Come on.
You know, receivers, we had a lot of time, so we would just practice dances and things when we would score.
No. So one thing Vi never taught me is how to dance. I know that.
Is this the game you started shooting everybody, Glenn?
I think that was a San Diego State game where I pulled the pistols out.
Okay.
Didn't like San Diego State. They're, you know, that ugly black and red and whatever color that
There's
is.
There's Lewis hugging.
14-0. So, again, like, we'd seen this typically in so much this season where you get out to a big lead early. But, I mean, Wyoming, they battled. And we'll get to a point where, you know, it becomes just an old whack Wild West shootout. I mean, there were 1,000-plus yards of total offense between these two teams. There were 6 lead changes in the second half alone, Robbie. What's going through your mind when, again, the BYU defense, we were joking, like, you've been so good, but, like, there were some breakdowns, and this was a game that the offense needed to score 40-plus in order to win the game.
Yeah, I think we felt good offensively. We felt comfortable. We felt like we could score. And the thing about the defense, they were like a top-10 defense. So this defense was as good as we've ever played against, like all the guys are talking about in practice. And so the key to our season was people stepped up when they needed to. And once again, the defense did the same thing. They stepped up when they had to and just made the bright plays. So it was just a good win. It was a good win to win those tight games and stuff like that.
How many shutouts did you guys pitch that year? I mean, I went back and looked at it. Like, the low-scoring games were like a huge number of our games.
Yeah.
I used to watch on the sideline. You know, after the coaches talked to us when the offense was on the sideline, you guys were on the field. I used to stand and watch Leon light people up. Just to watch Leon. I just put my eyes on him, and sure enough, I'd be laughing on the sideline because he would just destroy offensive players out there. I mean, the offense gets credit because of all the line of quarterbacks, but the defense was phenomenal. And just go look at the scores of those games and how many of them were low scoring that they had to step up.
Love it.
It's Kyle.
That was a part of our team, too. Yeah. That was an everyday practice right there. Yeah.
We were the guys in the blue in the offense. Yeah. The defense was in the yellow. That's how it looked.
We were a chirpy team.
We had a bunch
of people that talked trash nonstop.
Yeah. Whoa. Not a bunch. You had selective few.
One person.
Leon was quiet.
Leon was quiet.
I learned that from Coach Fred Whittingham.
He was the only guy that scared me ever
on the football field. Fred Whittingham. He was a scary guy. He told me to shut up. I shut up, but he said, shut up.
Leon, again, this was an outlier. The defense, in large part, was so lights out for BYU much of the season. But, I mean, to your credit, you made enough plays late to slow down Wyoming's offense. What was this game like for you? And Jim, we'll have you comment too. What was this like for our two defensive star panelists here all these offensive guys to play in?
It was frustrating. You know, that was probably the worst game we had played to that point. And that happens in a long season. Defenses, they give up points sometimes, and that was one of them. But I think it helped, actually. It kind of slapped us in the face and said, you're not as good as you think you are. And the next few games, as you can see, I think we took care of business.
Wyoming takes a 38-33 lead late. Defense needs to make a stop. You do. You come up with it. But I mean, we always hear, well, whoever has the ball last is probably going to win this game. And Kelly, did you feel that way? Like, as long as we have the ball last, we're going to win this game.
Yes, I felt that in every game we played in. And this was an interesting game. It's not like we run the ball a lot, but I actually had 100 yards rushing in the game. And that was a big deal at BYU, have a running back with 100 yards rushing. I always felt if we had the ball with no matter how much time's left, Robbie was going to find a way and the coach was going to find a way and we were going to make the score to win. No matter what the score was, we were going to find a way.
David, why no panic here when you get in a shootout like this?
Go back to the previous games. We didn't panic in Hawaii. We just wanted a different way. You don't panic in any game. You just find different ways to win it. And I think part of that is just, as these guys have brought up, the practice. I'm not sure how practices are today, but just the competition. You knew somebody was going to make a play, and you always counted on it being somebody wearing blue and white.
Kozlowski got the ball a lot.
Well, that was the fourth down play.
So, Spencer, that play they just showed.
Was the fourth down play.
We're going down to try to win the game.
Yeah.
And it was fourth and 10. Right there. So we called an option route for Kaz. So Kaz goes up. All he has to do is spot open, get in between a couple of guys, and I throw it to him. He gets right behind the linebacker.
So I
don't even have a vision of Kaz where he's at.
I did have a concussion. I actually have to
wave him over, like scoot over to throw it to him. So with all that said, this offensive line that I had, you can just see the amazing protection that I had every game. These guys worked so hard and they were so good that I always felt confident that we were going to be able to play good, and it's because of these guys right here.
Yes.
And Coach the other guys that I played with.
Coach Olson, how would you rate the offensive line performance specifically against Wyoming in this dramatic 41-38 win?
Well, the offensive line always played tough, and I thought they were great competitors. We had the internal competition like they talked about. But they knew the scheme and they knew what they had to do. And the depth they had, as Trevor mentioned, about Craig Garrick, what a great person he was. And each one of them had the personality that we weren't going to lose. You know, we were going to give Robbie the protection he needed. And if the defense decided to take the day off a little bit, then we were going to have to get more yardage on offense. But we were all in it to win, whatever we had to do, offense, defense, or special teams. Mm. And the offensive line, I think, stepped up to the plate, and they had the protection.
Yeah. I was just reminded of a memory about that game. I'll share it with you. So I get to the NFL, and I play with Wyoming had a great tight end named Jay Novacek. And Jay was there when I got to St. Louis. And back then, they don't do it anymore, I don't think, but they used to make rookies stand up and sing their school fight song. So they tell me, Sikahema, you stand up and sing your BYU fight song. And as I was getting up, I look over and I see Novacek. And I get to the microphone and I said, I'd like to have Jay Novacek come and sing because he knows the fight song better than I do. He heard it played over and over and over again. I got such a huge ovation from my teammates. They made Novacek get up and sing with me.
Outstanding. No rest for the weary after this just crazy game against Wyoming. Now you got to go on the road and play against the always formidable and tough Air Force Falcons, who, by the way, they're 5-2. They had just won at Notre Dame and won a tough game against Navy as well. So they had some momentum. You got to go into Colorado Springs as well and do your thing and try and keep this undefeated streak going. So, Trevor, as you prepare for a team that is as disciplined as Air Force, what's that like, especially when you have an extra target on your back?
Whatever. Didn't matter. We were good and we knew it. Here's the thing, though, and that's true. I'm not kidding you, man. Nothing ever worried me. Pitt didn't worry me. Michigan didn't worry me. These guys, though, I hated playing because I couldn't hate them. Every team that we played, I hated with a visceral, white-hot rage, right? I would go out early for pregame warm-up, and then a couple of their guys would come jogging out, and I would hate them. Now, I knew that how dare they be on the field? Well, I knew they had to be there because they had the game to play, so intellectually I knew it was right, but I hated them for being there, right? I couldn't hate Air Force because of who these guys were and what they do for our country and all those things. So I had to play this game against these guys for 4 years emotionally flat, and I hated playing them because of that.
Kelly, just saw your touchdown to make it 21-9, and as Trevor's saying, like, yeah, these are outstanding servicemen for our country, but at some point it becomes football, and you got to win the game. And the pressure is there to keep this undefeated season alive.
Well, and what I remember is I think it was like our first live ESPN game, and Lynn Swann was there interviewing all of us, the receiver from the Steelers. And I'm going, well, this must be a big deal if they're bringing in, you know, ESPN at that time. And it wasn't like we got to be on TV a lot, but I remember that at this game.
Blinding speed.
Don't even bring it up. The play you just saw caused one of the biggest fights between Kaz and I. Because my version of it is Robbie went into scramble mode, so I broke off my route, caught it for a touchdown. I go, you know, I'm in the end zone waiting to celebrate. I got a friend up there who's throwing me crusty stares and a few other things because he thought it was his touchdown.
He threw it to me. I'm not sure how you got it.
I was throwing it to Sluggo.
Jim Herman, 100%. I want to point out, this is a two-point conversion to tie the game. It's 27-28. You come up with the stop right there.
Defense got to play. Defense got to play.
Sticker.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Hey, honestly, though, I'm watching all these highlights. Dave Mills, Glenn Kozlowski, Lakeh Hamouli, and our offensive line were really good. It's kind of cool to watch. We obviously don't do this a lot. It's just amazing to see runs by Dave and runs by Kaz and Lakeh. The other thing about Lakeh, he's talked more tonight than he did in 4 years. It's awesome.
Happy he has a voice. I'm thrilled.
It's honestly, Lakeh is truly one of the kindest, nicest people on the planet and just a consummate team player. And as you can see in some of these highlights, was just ripped, piece of just muscle walking around, but did not say a lot. And it's nice to hear him talk. Okay, good to see you, brother.
Took me 40 years, but I
took a little while.
I've learned.
After this, you go to New Mexico, you welcome New Mexico. You blow out the Lobos 48-0. Lakeh, you had a 33-yard touchdown in that game, a 2-yard touchdown run. You were instrumental in getting BYU to week 9, where you're number 4 in the country and you're hosting UTEP. And then you blow out the Miners, too. So after week 9, and now you're a top 4 team in the country, did it start to resonate with you that, holy cow, This thing could actually happen. We might run the table and actually compete for a national championship.
Well, now Norm Chow is not here. When I was recruited from Hawaii, he promised me that I'm going to carry the ball all the time. So this is the only time that they start giving me the ball in that game. So that,
Norm promised that to everybody.
coach leaves and the real stories come out.
I didn't know that. Norman liked any of us.
Week 10, San Diego State at number 4, BYU. Again, the Cougars, a top 4 team. They're knocking on the door of being the top-ranked team in the country. And Leon and Jim, this is where the defense, again, flexed and reestablished itself. You held the Aztecs to 165 total yards of offense.
Yeah. That was great. Yeah, I'm from San Diego, so I was not going to let San Diego State come to BYU.
Me too. I had a few talks.
I had a few talks with some of the players during the practice that week, and I said, this is the game, guys. Yes. We're going to play this one
all the way.
Helix High School has produced so many great players. We're so glad you chose BYU, but, you know, obviously you knew a bunch of those guys you were playing against. So what's that like for you on this chirpy BYU team to be in a game like that?
It's bragging rights. You know, I knew, like you said, I know most of those guys on that team, played high school ball with them. And we work out in the summer and we talk to each other about what's going to happen when we play each other. And it's almost like, it's almost as big as Utah for me. And I definitely had a game that game. So
yes, you did. And the offense continued to make plays. Obviously, you put up 34. At the end of this highlight, Glenn, you were referencing this earlier. This is where the finger guns come out. This is the finger guns game.
Like, I grew up in San Diego, so all these guys I played against, so I just let them know that I just shot them, and they're dead now. And I told them. And I remember I told one of my buddies, I said, you know how to spell Kozlowski before the game? And he goes, no. I said, you will. And then I walked away. I mean, he's going to be looking at my back all game trying to figure out how to catch me. Yeah, we just did not like these guys.
No. Yeah, we weren't. And by the way, just you're kind of getting a feel here. Our team had a whole bunch of great guys, but on game day, we weren't very nice.
Oh, you see the physical play of Kurt Gavay, and we've mentioned his name a few times today.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Lewis, what was it like to practice against a guy like Kurt Gavay?
You know, we had a drill where offensive linemen had to go against the linebackers, and I always thought it was unfair because they were like 5 yards off the ball. And so they got a running start, and we had to go against these type of guys, right? But it prepared us, like I said, for other opponents where there were times. I remember we played New Mexico, and I blocked one of their linebackers and just, like, locked up on him. And he just stood there in place running his feet. And he just says, you got the biggest guns I've ever seen. And I was like, what? You're talking to me? Right? I mean, but we were prepared because we had guys like that to compete every day. And I'll say this about Kurt Gavay, you know, spending all those years, what, 18 years in the NFL, right? Yeah. BYU was the only school that recruited him. He was the only school that recruited him, and he got an offer. That says a lot about coaches doing their job, you know, looking for the best players. And more importantly, the right players to come to the school.
Lewis, I want to ask you a question. You mentioned that guy, and that makes me laugh. You had him just stuck right there. I just figured out something that Coach Olson and Coach French did that we had. What did you? They used to have over like a bar towels that were bent over the bar and then taped up. And every day before practice, we got to go over there and do pull-ups on these bars. And I just figured out, like, about 2 months ago why you had us doing that. You remember that? What did you think of that?
I remembered I couldn't do a pull-up.
Yeah. Here's the thing, though. Because you talk about having that guy stuck there, right?
Yeah.
The thing is, we always got accused of holding. We didn't hold according to the rules. Okay? Because if the guy's in front of you and his jersey isn't coming out, it's not holding. You can have him locked up and extended out, and you could have a grip on that guy's shoulder pads, plate, and they'll never call it. Everybody does it. It's no big deal. Here's the thing, though. I just figured this out. Those pull-ups were not to develop our lats or condition. They were to develop our grip strength, right? And so you know, your feet and your grip strength are what make you not hold. You stay in front of him, you have locked up and locked out, and that's what you were doing to that linebacker, and his feet were running, and he was stuck like a fish on a hook. I can see it in my mind's eye right now. And it's because you guys were sneaky.
Guns right there.
There you go.
Guns.
There we go.
Pistols.
The Pistols.
Are we going to see did this you do in that slow in high motion, Glenn?
No, I never did that in high school. No, I just was the spur of the moment. He and I had been talking to each other, so I just let him know that I scored and shot him.
Oh, goodness. It's one thing to give up like 6 points in a game, but in a two-game span to give up less than one touchdown, like that's incredible. That's making a statement for sure. And now you jump to number three in the country, and you go to Utah for the rivalry game in Salt Lake City. And I know this was not the heyday for the Utes, for sure, but, I mean,
didn't matter.
If ever there was a time for Utah to want to beat BYU and ruin a perfect season, it was this week. So, Robbie, did you feel any additional pressure going into this iconic rivalry game in this season?
Yeah, of course. I mean, look, we're 3-3 in the country. We're super close. We all feel like we can do it. We can win out. We know we're going to get the very best out of Utah. And it never mattered. Even throughout all the years of playing Utah, it didn't matter who was ranked, who was favored. It was always a tough talking, smack-talking game. And, I mean, I made some mistakes in this game that probably cost us a little bit. But our defense was just really good. Our defense was good all year long.
Utah, it was so interesting. They warmed up with white pants and red shirts. They went in the locker room and came out just before the game and put all red on and got their fans going crazy. They didn't even warm up with the red on red.
Anything to gain a mental advantage.
Yeah.
Okay, you throw a twist. Vi, you know what's on the line here. You know what this game means, not just for bragging rights and in the in-state scenario going on here, but at halftime, you find out that number one Nebraska and number two South Carolina both lose. You're the number three team. If BYU wins this game, for all intents and purposes, you're going to be the number one team in the country. So what's going through your mind when you first heard that news?
I don't think we heard it in the locker room.
So you did not know at halftime?
No, they didn't.
Okay.
No.
It wasn't until after the game that that we came in and learned that had happened. For us, Lake and I, we're the first Tongans that came to BYU on football scholarships. And the University of Utah had some, we had cousins over there. Molo Naihola and Filippo Mokofisi were two of their star players. And I remember, Kozlowski, every time I look up, Kozlowski's throwing the ball and shooting somebody. And there's that elbow. Dragging that elbow off the field.
Yeah. Hey, that one hurt a little bit when I threw the shotgun at him.
But you know, in the Tongan community, which is quite considerable here in Utah, and they, you know, we were in recruiting battles with a lot of the Tongan kids in Salt Lake. But we, you know, we always got the best ones. But some of them went there because they knew they didn't have a chance to come and play at BYU because Lake was there, or Kurt Govea was there. And so it was a big deal in the Tongan community. And I remember one of the things that I remember about this game is that I learned after the game that my dad wasn't that unusual. He got into a fight in the stands had security take him, haul him away. And so I was more concerned about my dad and being able to bail him out of wherever he was than I was about, you know, who had lost.
Is that what
you
asked you for $10 during the game? Is that what it was? God, you got $10. I'm like, why would I have $10?
But, you know, a win against Utah, of course, and the way that it happened. Were we named number one right after this game, right?
Yes.
It was after this game we were named number one. And it was even sweeter because it happened that way for us.
Almost fittingly that it comes after that victory in Salt Lake City against your heated rival that you jumped number one. And Kelly, you have a 4-yard touchdown that caps the scene 24-14. When did you find out that Nebraska and South Carolina had both lost in shocking upsets and that you were the lone unbeaten team in America?
Yeah, it wasn't until after the game. It was, I think it was an hour after in the locker room. The coaches finally said, we're all getting dressed, all getting ready to go. And they said, just by the way, did you realize the two teams ahead of us just lost? And we're like, wow, we might get number one. But I didn't feel that they'd put us number one. I felt they were always going to just take it away from us because it's BYU, we're not in one of the big conferences, and that we probably still wasn't going to be it. Somebody else was going to jump ahead of us is how I felt. And then when we were put number one, then it made it a little tougher to stay there. But, yeah, I didn't think they'd even put us there.
The rankings didn't come out until, like, Monday, right?
Sure.
Monday or Tuesday.
But I remember distinctly after the game someone saying that the big one to me was South Carolina because they were the ones that were going to be tough to beat, right? And they played Navy. No offense to Navy. But we certainly thought a 9-0 South Carolina team wasn't going to beat Navy. I remember getting in the car and turning on the radio and hearing that Navy had beat South Carolina. And it wasn't like, hey, we're going to be number one. But I thought, you know, wow, that was a domino that worked out for us in our favor for sure.
BYU jumps to number one in the rankings, so the poll comes out and it becomes a reality. I can only imagine what that moment felt like for you as players and as a team to see that number one next to BYU out of Provo, Utah. And you had a lot of people forget, like, the Utah game wasn't the final game. You still had to play Utah State. So you played a game as the number
Jim
one
Kimmel.
Team before you went to the Holiday Bowl and faced Michigan. So, I mean, Trevor, what was that moment like for you the first time you saw it come to fruition that BYU was the lone unbeaten and number one in the country?
You know, it wasn't shocking. You know, you talk about that Navy win over South Carolina. Navy was like 3-6 at the time, something like that. So it's not like, you know, they lost to a top five team. And it just made me think going back to the Pitt game. It just felt like destiny in a way. Because after the Pitt game, we're flying back. And it just seemed like we just got the hardest game of the regular season out of the way. And so we get to this point, and now we're ranked number one, and we're playing Utah State, and they're a rival, and they're tough to beat anytime just because of the passions in that game. And it just felt like the next step in a process that wasn't inevitable, but that was laid out if we continued to deserve it.
Now, Vi, I'm going to bring you back in here because you and David get involved here. We just saw Kelly Smith catch another pass. And Lucky, you're down inside the 10-yard line to set up BYU for what turned out to be a score and a runaway performance here. But, Vi, when you go up 17-0 and you feel like, okay, we got this thing on lockdown, we're going to finish the regular season unbeaten, how do you handle the emotions of that, wondering like, okay, well, what now? What's next for BYU football?
We had never been involved in something that was so, we were a national story. So every day, ESPN was a growing network, but they aren't what they are now. But we were on the Today Show, right? I don't know if it was Bryant Cumbel who said it then or later, calling us Bo Diddley Tech, who's BYU, right? Mm-hmm. And that just, it drew people into the story, this national story about this small little private religious school in the Intermountain West that's now the number one, you know, team in the entire country. And every day, I remember going to classes when I did.
I gave you that look like, are you sure you want?
that the first 10 minutes of every class, it didn't matter, it was political science, religion, whatever the class was, it started with a little 10-minute Q&A about the game from Saturday. And it was, maybe that's why I went to class, because it was
actually
more fun.
That year, Sports Illustrated, that's when people still read magazines. Sports Illustrated, for all you young kids out there, was a magazine that would come in your mailbox, and it was like the thing. They actually did a big article on BYU, if you guys remember that. I think it came out like mid-season, and it was substantial. Like, it wasn't, you know, we didn't get half a page. It was a 3, 4, 5, 6 page was a significant article into BYU football and what we had, you know, Coach Edward had built quietly in a flyover state that no one knew about. And so it was all that stuff. It was, that's what I remember more than anything, is really just the macro view of it. Like, we were two, Coach Edwards is, you know, obviously a Hall of Fame coach for a reason. He managed us, he managed the process. I wasn't thinking, oh my gosh, we're going to be number one. It was, we got more work to do. And it was kind of more of the macro view of, wow, we're actually part of something that's unique in BYU history. We're part of a sports program that's elevating its exposure to the rest of the country, and we're doing it on the football field. And I just remember that being cool, as opposed to the devil's in the details. I don't remember all that. LJ.
We're watching Lee Johnson fake a punt and get a first down.
Pull the hammy. Pull the hammy right there.
He probably got a sticker for that.
Sticker for that for sure, right?
Spencer, the other thing that happened with all the attention that came to us was, and we were talking about this backstage because it was something that Glenn was involved with, we got invited by President Hinckley to come to church headquarters at the Hotel Utah, where President Kimball was staying with his two counselors. We got invited as a team to come there for a dinner. So we went in three buses. You remember that, Mel? We all boarded in three buses, and you can bring your girlfriend or your wife.
It was wives, but go on. The best part about when Lavelle told the team that we're going to go eat up with the apostles, and some of the non-members are like, well, how important is this? And he goes, it's about as important as coming to my house for dinner. And that's what Lavelle said. We're all like laughing. We all know, you know, it's pretty important and a big deal to go have the general authorities and the 12 there. But Lavelle joked and says, oh, it's just like coming to my house for dinner. And it kind of was. It was pretty awesome. Lavelle's kind of like a general authority all the time anyway, but it was awesome.
And the other part, too, is if you remember, what was the counselor that got up and said, you will win?
And the war was President Hinckley.
It was President Monson. President Monson got up and said, you will win and the work will move forward. And I remember leaning over to my wife, I said, we're locked, man. This is a done deal. Big guy just said it. I'm on. I'm going to be all right. I'm the only one that actually thought that, oh, yeah, we're locked. We're going to win. So we played like we were locked, and then we had to come back and win again. That's all.
There's my dad. There's my dad.
There is. Oh, hey.
You see my dad?
No fight against Utah State?
No, he just got let out that week.
One game at home, Vi's running down the field. He runs into the end zone. My mom used to wear this cowboy hat and Vi's dad. And I don't know how they did it. They'd always get on the field together. And they are celebrating with Vi in the end zone, jumping up. And my mom just basically lifted up, form tackled him, and almost dropped him. And Vi's, woo. And I'm like, I said to Vi, how did my mom and your dad get out there?
Because they're Tongan and Samoan.
Yeah.
That's why. Did you guys know that Glenn's mother's Samoan? That's why he's nuts. He's got the Polish.
Is that the reason?
Polish from his dad, Samoan from his mother. I'm telling you, that's woo.
And then when Robbie got hurt in the Holiday Bowl, Vi's dad was the first guy out there treating him. He had, I mean, you can see it in the, if we see it, he's the first guy working on his ankle.
Tell him about your mom.
And my mom was there too.
Yeah. How about your mom the people in the stands were like kind of yapping around me?
Oh, yeah, my mom, like Vi, my mom got kicked out of San Diego State for beating up somebody. Well, this kid was, this punk college kid was trying to give one of the wife's a straw. He was dipping his beer and trying to give it to the kid. So my mom jumped over the top and just wailed on him. So and Robbie and I are sitting there, and Robbie goes, who is that? And I could see this blue cowboy hat, and I go, I think that's my mom. And she's up top just doing like this, lights out. And Robbie goes, was she like that home? I said, all the time. I was running. So, yeah, between Vi's dad and my mom, they spent more time on the field than anybody else.
Yeah. I would tell my dad, hey, you can't come down the field. There's security. He goes, security, they're just college kids. They're not real security.
Vi, you referenced Bryant Gumbel's quote.
There you go.
There's a sign that said, Bryant, who'd you play football for anyway? So throwing it back at the national broadcaster, but what he had asked essentially was, he said you cannot rank BYU number one. Who'd they play? Bo Diddley Tech? Well, you handled Pittsburgh, and I know that Pitt, they went through a rash of injuries, and they did not have the season that they were hoping for, but you can only beat and play who's in front of you. And for me, as a broadcaster, the longtime argument when I hear people try and push back against this number one ranking and people that are in Gumbel's camp is, well, who ranked BYU number one at the end of the season? It was all of the national media. It wasn't local Provo beat reporters that were voting in this AP poll. It was a...
In fact, they ranked us number two, I think, our local guys, didn't they?
It was the national media that ranked BYU number one. And you know what BYU didn't do? You didn't lose to a Navy like South Carolina did. And
or Kansas like Oklahoma did.
Exactly.
Or tie to Texas like Kansas did, right? So, I mean... I'm with you. I like where you're going. I didn't mean to interrupt, but yes, I'm with you.
But in fairness also, Pitt was top five when we played them.
Yes.
And we actually knocked some of them out. You knocked, I think, some of their key players out. And I think Air Force was 19 at the time we played them. And that Michigan team, they didn't have a good record at the time we played them, but they were like a top 10 team.
They were number two. Yeah, they were number two, and then I think Harbaugh got hurt in the fourth game.
They lost like eight guys to injuries.
And if they would have beat Ohio State, they actually would have gone to the Rose Bowl. So it was loaded with talent. I mean, you obviously can tell we've had this conversation before, right? I mean, I think I actually just, for jog my memory, get on YouTube. I don't know who he is, but he put a great video together about how BYU really changed the landscape of college football and how it affected the BCS and all the steps that have really happened since our win to really coming into the playoffs. It's fascinating. And it's really interesting how it's all tied together. But without Coach Edwards and what he did at BYU, he was the disruptor. He was the guy who changed the game.
Yep. And then just to put a bow on that Michigan thing, they lost like eight starters. By the time the Holiday Bowl rolled around, they were all back but one, and that was Harbaugh.
Yep.
The team that we played was that one of the best teams in the nation early in the season.
Yep. Yeah.
Their record didn't reflect it.
Probably had four first-round draft choices on that team. Yeah.
Now, Leon, you mentioned a couple of times San Diego native, Helix High School legend. You go back to San Diego to play in the Holiday Bowl, and this carries extra significance for you because your father, who had been diagnosed with cancer, got to watch you play in a game that clinched the national championship. As you look back on that experience, how would you sum up the emotions that you were feeling and playing with in that game?
Yeah, that was a special moment for me and my family as well. We took a lot of hard work to get to that point. You know, when we first thought of the idea, it was actually an idea of a friend of ours in San Diego. She's a nurse, Rebecca Charles, and she knew that this was probably going to be the last game my dad would ever see me play. So the doctors were saying, there's no way he's going to be able to get out on the field. I mean, it's impossible. She doesn't take no for an answer. She's that kind of a woman. And so she talked the doctors into, hey, if we can find a way to make it safe for him on the field, we'll get him out there. So with the help of Lavelle Edwards and the Holiday Bowl committee, Lavelle had to talk to Bo Schembechler. I think they had to make sure that both sides were okay with it. They made it possible for my dad to be out there. And they popped him up on a gurney right on the sideline. He had the best seat in the house, and I played the best game I ever played in my career just for him.
Oh, outstanding. These are the stories that, I mean, there are so many that have been shared tonight that are so great, but it's that type of insight that made us want to put on a production like this to really go inside the details of such an emotional game like that. And Glenn, you said you felt like you were a lock when you got confirmation from some brethren in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. But
yeah, when the big guy says it, it's game
when
on.
When Leon's dad showed up on the field, I don't know how BYU is going to lose that game. And you found a way, and what a special night to cap off an unforgettable season, but not without some drama. So, Lewis, I'm going to throw it back to you. When you're down late in this game, and Robbie's hurt, and he's hobbled, and Michigan's playing physical, and they've muddied up the game, it's an ugly game. What type of feelings and emotions were you dealing with when you know you're so close, but you're gonna require a rally once again?
It's about like continuing the battle, right? I mean, they were good, obviously, right? And every opponent we played, I would probably say it was probably the best guys that I've played. I think they had two first round picks, D linemen. Mm-hmm. And it was a continual battle. Robbie got hurt, but you know, when a person gets hurt, you just kind of regather, you know, and refocus. So
the game was physical game, but I think the great thing about BYU, you know, based on what we were taught over the years, is to continue to have faith in the process and all the work that we put in. And to know that, you know, if Fowler comes in, we're going to do as good a job protecting for him, you know, we're grateful Robbie was able to play. And we knew we were going to make plays. As Jim said, we came from a culture of winning. I think in my 4 years, I think we lost 5 games. And that's unheard of. And so you trust the process. You trust your teammates. You trust the calls that the coaches are going to make. And you just do your job. It's pretty simple.
Robbie, as you watch these highlights, and again, obviously you were not full strength. Did you ever get an official diagnosis on what the injury was, by the way?
I doubt it. I don't think so. I don't think so.
He wanted to be the MVP.
My dad said he had an ACL.
I accuse him of faking
it. My dad kind of said, your ankle's a little sore, but go out and go play.
You should be okay.
Yeah.
What type of pain were you dealing with, especially on that final drive as you find Kelly down the sideline for the game-winning touchdown pass?
You know, the biggest pain was really I had a high ankle sprain. And so really, it's amazing what adrenaline does. Because when I went back out to warm up, I had a hard time thinking I could even plant my foot. But the rush of adrenaline just allows you to play. Everybody in here played hurt. Every single person up here and out there and the members that aren't here played hurt.
I didn't play hurt.
And very...
Well, he was hurting everyone.
And so that made a huge difference. We didn't have any key injuries. And when we'd had injuries, they played. And we just hung together. And just like Louis said, it's just we trusted the process. And everyone went out and did their job. And we'll just let the rest show what happened right there.
24-17. I do need to follow up and ask, and I'll start with you, Mel. How was Lavelle's temperament throughout the course of the season and specifically this game against Michigan?
Lavelle was always one that had everything under control, you know. Mm-hmm. And as was mentioned earlier, we got him one time to put headsets on during a game, and that drove him nuts. So he said he trusted the process, and he was well-respected in the profession of hiring good people, get out of their way, let them coach, put the responsibility back on the players that we've talked about today, and they're the ones that set the goals. They're the ones that said, this is what we have to do to win, this is what we can do. But Lavelle was a calming influence with the whole thing, and what a great person, not only as a coach. He's one of the greatest coaches. Mm. He recruited me out of high school, and I followed him through the whole career as far as working for him. There was not a better coach in America than Lavelle Edwards. And so the fact that... I have to tell you a story, though, because Bo Schembechler from Michigan, you know, he accused our offensive line of holding, you know. Can you believe that, you know? And so he confronted Lavelle with that, or come back to Lavelle, and Lavelle said, yeah, we really noticed in that Michigan game that your guys were holding on every play. And so we won the national championship, got even with Bo, and life was better in Provo after we won the national championship.
David, one more question for you before we start to wrap this up. But when you had completed the perfect season, including the Holiday Bowl win over Michigan, at what point did you believe that BYU was going to be the national champion?
Truthfully, at the end of the game. We'd done everything we could. We went in number one. We took care of it. We did not offensively. Thank you, the two defensive guys over here. We did not play a great game. We had, what, 5 turnovers?
6.
You got it, Leon.
Off of my shoulder, but think about it.
Thank you, Leon.
I think we'd showed to an audience that even not playing perfect, we knew how to win. And isn't that what a national champion's supposed to do?
And usually national champs are crowned right after the game. There were still games to be played. We played around Christmas time, and there were still games being played on New Year's Day. And so we kind of were left out in the cold, not knowing anything until those games were over, which was, what, 2 weeks later. And so we're like, You know, we never knew what would happen, if the voters would change their mind, if something else would happen. And so, you know, most national championships, they walk off with the trophy. Here we are going, we don't know. We don't know what, if we're going to win it or not, even though we all felt like we were number one and we did everything we could. We needed a little help, I think. I think Washington went in and upset somebody, which helped us, and then we beat them really bad the next year, which
yes,
is good.
Yes, you did,
so.
Washington.
You know what? Let me say this, because I just triggered a memory, just Mel talking about Lavelle recruiting him. Obviously, recruiting is much more complicated now, and NIL and transfer portal has made it even more so, and Kalani is in the room and knows that better than anybody. I don't know how the evaluation process was probably different in our day, but we all got recruited by other schools. In fact, I committed to go to Arizona State. I was a running back. I wanted to go run the football at ASU for Frank Cush. But Mel Olson is the guy who came and recruited Arizona, and he came to my high school. And I remember he came one day, and we were talking about this, Mel remembers it, called me into the principal's office, and he had my transcripts. And I knew that wasn't good. He said, I'm looking at your transcripts, and he said, are you a citizen? And I thought that was odd. I said, actually, we're not. We have green cards. And he said, great. I don't want you to take the SAT ACT or the SAT, because it's a test given for American students. He said, you're going to come in as an international student to BYU. Your grades, it'd be tough to get you in. And I remember I turned to Mel and I said, that is the greatest recruiting pitch I've ever heard. Don't take the ACT or the SAT. I'm your guy. I'm coming to BYU. And, you know, those coaches, this staff had to be creative. Coaches are always creative in how they recruit, but I look around this room, they go get, you know, Jim Herman out of Wisconsin. Trevor comes out of Sacramento, and they go get Leon and Glenn from San Diego, Louis from the North Shore of Hawaii, as with La K. Beaver's greatest player in the history of Beaver.
Hey, and Lavelle still has the best Beaver fight song that we always sing. We even sang it at his
That's
funeral,
right.
Patty.
He knew the fight song for right. Beaver High School.
It wasn't our fight song, but I had to learn it. And I asked Lavelle, well, what's the second verse? He goes, oh, it's easy. Same as the first. Just sing it again. So Lavelle and I sang that song so many times together. It was awesome. And it did show up at the funeral.
The fact that they went out and made the effort to bring us all in as they did, and it became a bonding experience for all of us. And there's guys, you know, in the audience that I can't wait to see them all after we're done. But it's one of the great brotherhoods in our life's experience.
The great Patty Edwards is with us, and she's down in front, and we'd love to have Patty share some of her thoughts. Patty, how has this night been for you as you remember this 84 national championship team?
It's been wonderful. It's been fun. And the reason why it's great are the wives that are here tonight, too, because they played a part in your success. I always felt that when you dated a football player, it was different than when you married one. And so I thought we wives need to get together to support our husbands. And I think they did a very good job. And thank you, all you wives that are here tonight. It's fun to see you. And I'm grateful to be here and to be invited. And I have such great confidence that BYU football will continue to grow, and it will continue to represent the school the way it should be represented, and that Kalani, the program is in his hands now, and he will do a great job. And I love this kid. I saw him grow up as a player, like all of you. I mean, you were just kids when you came to the program. You're men now and grandfathers, and you're doing a good job. Thank you, and May we all enjoy the now, because the now is all we have.
Thanks. We love you, Patty.
That's our matriarch, the matriarch of BYU football.
That's true.
We love you, Patty.
Well-deserved standing ovation. Thank you, Patty, for being here tonight. A sincere thank you to all of you for making a sacrifice to be here with us tonight. Many of you have traveled from far and wide and made time in your very, very busy schedules. Our gratitude to all of you, and what a great night to commemorate the 1984 national champions at BYU. I would invite all of you gentlemen and everybody in the audience, including so many members of the team that are not up here as panelists, to stand with us and sing the Cougar Fight song together. So let's do it. Cause, you think you can remember the words?
Try not.
Let's go.